Welcome in, everybody, to the Batflip Podcast. My name is David. I am here with Matt. Damien's internet has let us down once again, so it's just two hosts. One more time, obviously, last week. I missed out. I was working. Matt, how you doing this week? We did hear, you might have heard us, we were on for about 5 minutes earlier, but we're going to go ahead and start it all fresh and give it a new intro. Matt, how you doing?
Well, I've had a good week so far. It's been it's been fun to watch my Braves have a lot of success, and that's always a good time. And I've been watching all kinds of sports, been watching the hockey playoffs and a little bit of the basketball playoffs, but not much. And it's been a lot of fun. So how are you doing, David?
I'm doing good. You know, we're trying to move. I think I mentioned that. And last week I was doing some work and, you know, after hours, I'm doing like traffic civil engineering. So I was taking parking counts. We ended up getting the study out last week. So it all went well. And thankfully, I probably don't have to do any more work late on a Monday again. So, with that, I've been pretty busy, and I'm glad to be back here talking some baseball. And we are going to do kind of a buy-sell situation. So we're going to look at some teams that have currently, started this season. We're going to look at some players and how they've begun this season, whether good or bad. And we're going to buy the result that this season has started with. So we'll start with the Cleveland Guardians, who are currently 16-6, which is the best record in Major League Baseball at the moment. And they're currently leading the AL Central by 3 games over the Royals. The Cleveland Guardians are a team with a plus 52 run differential early. They've been really, really strong. And so, Matt, do you buy that the Cleveland Guardians are a best team in baseball type of team?
No, I do not buy that. I do buy that they are a lot better than the general consensus thought they were going to be this year. This is a team that, And a few of these teams we're going to talk about here with the good, or the next team we'll talk about too. This is a team that it seems like is able to pull out a good roster every year, even though that they're not spending any money and they don't have a lot of brand names, and a lot of times they move names that they do when they do get them. But, they had last year, they didn't have a great season. I think it was one of their first seasons with a losing record in a while. And I think the big thing about them last year was, I think they just had some underperformance from some guys who are probably better players than they played last year. Like, Andrés Giménez is not a guy that was the guy he was in 2022 when he put up over 6 wins above replacement and had a 142 WRC+. But he's also not a below average hitter like he was last year. He's somewhere in between that. And that's what he's been so far this year. He's also an elite defender. So yeah. I think that's something you look at. A guy like him, Stephen Kwan is kind of similar to him in the way that, like, in 2022 when they won the division, Stephen Kwan put up 5 wins above replacement. He had a 126 WRC+, and last year he was an exactly league average hitter. And this year, granted he's had a really high batting average on balls in play this year, but he's probably more of a 110 WRC+ type hitter that'll probably put up 4 wins above replacement. So, that's kind of what you look for. And then, this is a team that seems to always figure out the pitching. The pitching injuries they have are unfortunate, especially Shane Bieber, who had a great start to the year. But, they're always able to pull out some guys out of their bullpen for sure. Like, this year it's been Hunter Gaddis is the guy. And, insanely good in his first 11 games. And then you've got guys like you've got Clase in the bullpen. Their bullpen's pretty stacked. I mean, Cade Smith's had a really good start in their bullpen. Nick Sandlin's been really good. And they've been able to pull out enough starting pitching through, like Tristan McKenzie, who hasn't had a great start, but, he's a name. Logan Allen's kind of the same way. But, they've gotten a good contribution from Carlos Carrasco, who's back with the team. Tanner Beebe. Who was a rookie last year, has pitched all right for them in the rotation. So this is a team that has some good pieces. I don't think the pitching's going to hold up in the starting rotation long term unless they get some guys back, which they will not get Shane Bieber back, but they will get Gavin Williams back, I believe, somewhat soon. So, but this is a team that I do think that they're I don't know. They could be the favorite in this division now with how bad the Twins have started to me. But they've been pretty impressive so far. So I'm gonna buy that they're a legit contender in the Central. I'm gonna sell that they're like a best record in baseball type team.
Yeah, I'm gonna concur with that pretty much exactly. I want to point out that most of their offensive damage has been done by Josh Naylor, right? And that's a guy who's got a 187 WRC plus so far, 393 on base, 623 slugging, six homers, 20 RBIs. He's been the powerhouse that kind of the Naylor name was supposed to be as a prospects when it was him and his brother coming up in this farm system. And Bo's been okay, right? Two home runs. He's playing some pretty good defense at catcher for them, but nowhere near the impact that Josh is currently having on this offense. And it's one of those things where they're doing this without Jose Ramirez contributing, right? I'm selling that they're a best team in baseball. I don't think that's going to maintain, but I do believe that this is a team that is going to surprise me. They're going to prove me wrong in terms of my predictions, and I think they're definitely a favorite for this division. But we're gonna talk about another team that's right behind them. And I'm skipping over our notes a little bit, but let's talk about the team that's right behind them. The Kansas City Royals are 13-9. They have a plus 38 run differential, but this is a team that looks like the culmination of what was done in the offseason by a very aggressive Kansas City front office. Are we buying that the Kansas City Royals have turned a corner and are making plays at the top of the AL Central and will push this Cleveland team throughout the whole season?
I think I'm gonna buy the Royals. I was really skeptical about them, and I'm still skeptical in some ways about them. But I think their lineup. The funny thing to me is that everyone in the offseason talked about Seth Lugo and they talked about Michael Wacha. And I think the biggest thing that they've gotten, other than just those guys have been fine. Seth Lugo's got a really good ERA, although the metrics don't like him quite as much. I think the biggest thing that they've gotten has been the improvement from players they already have, and it's legit improvements. Stuff like, you got stuff like Salvador Perez hitting this year somehow, and also hitting, but you're not always worried about his bat. But he looked cooked last year completely, and I completely written off coming into this year, and he's looked pretty good so far. Vinny Pasquantino is healthy. He's a guy that they were going to rely on last year. And then you've got MJ Melendez and Nelson Velasquez, a couple guys who, last year they had some stretches where you're like, man, these guys might be pretty good, but they weren't putting it together consistently, and they've both kind of put it together consistently so far. I mean, you got MJ Melendez has got his plate discipline numbers are really good this year. The average is a little bit low. He's got a really low batting average on balls in play. And he's put up over a half a win above replacement. He's actually been a good defender and base runner to go along with a 121 WRC plus. So, you've gotten those contributions from some guys in your lineup that you probably weren't totally expecting to get that from. And then you look at their pitching, and I think their pitching's where the biggest, Cole Reagans has really proven that what he did last year, outside of his last start, which was honestly just a horrible luck start he just had. He gave up like seven earned runs, and like all of them were on singles and stuff. But you look at Cole Reagans, and he's just kind of proven that what he had done in the second half last year after the trade was legit. And then the guys they added in have been solid, and Brady Singer's really taken a step forward this year, kind of back to what he was year before last. The one thing that I do worry about this team's depth. I don't know that their offense, they've got a few guys that are really hot right now, and I don't know if their offense is deep enough when one of those guys maybe goes out of the lineup for a couple weeks or goes cold for a couple weeks. And then their pitching's kind of the same way. I really don't trust their bullpen at all. And I think that especially, I mean, they've got Will Smith closing games right now, and I'm just in shock that he's actually in their closing games in 2024. But you look at the depth in the bullpen, and then if you lose a starter in your rotation, that would be a pretty big problem too. But they're in this division. I think everyone's a contender at this point, except the White Sox. Like, because I could see a world where any of the other four teams could find a way to win the division. I mean, they're all like real close together, and I thought the Twins were going to be pretty head and shoulders above everyone else, except maybe Cleveland coming into the year. But at this point, I'm kind of feeling like they're all four are kind of even. So except
yeah.
Twins might not even be up that high. We'll talk about them here in a minute. But I do like this team. I guess I'm going to buy their start, but again, I'm gonna sell that this team ends up over 500. I'm gonna say this team does not end up 500 on the season. They're gonna be.
I think that ends up being a sell overall, right? Like I think this is not only is this a plus five like 500 start, this is a playoff style team start, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And I would say that's a sell in that case.
Yeah.
I'm buying this team as being a playoff team. I think they can absolutely get in there, given the weaker start in the AL East, right? I mean, that whole division is marginally over 500. So, you know, at the end of the day, the Rays or the Blue Jays may step forward and bypass, you know, where the Royals are right now. But it'll be a dogfight. And they all kind of have the same record. And I kind of feel similarly about the way this Royals team has, because you didn't mention it, Bobby Witt Jr. is continuing that superstar performance that he earned that $287 million extension in the offseason with, right? They have that superstar pedigree at the top of the lineup, do the Royals, right? And with Salvador Perez having doubled his walk rate, his career high walk rate. Salvador Perez has been around for 13 years. He has doubled his career high walk rate this season, and we're at 86 plate appearances. This is about the time that those rates start to settle and get more concrete as to what a player is going to perform over the course of a season. And you know, he's at 8%. He's never had a walk rate higher than like 4%. So this is a remarkable turn of events for Salvador Perez, and it's huge for the Royals. I do want to note that Will Smith is not closing games for the Royals. It's James MacArthur,
yeah,
who is awesome right now. He's got a 1.34 FIP, four saves. He's striking out a lot of guys. MacArthur's good. I don't think he'll be I don't think that closer role will be an issue for the Royals going forward. And John Schreiber setting up. That's a guy who was really good for the Red Sox for a while.
I think
so.
Will Smith might have started as the closer, but I don't blame him for taking him out of there very quick. And I was shocked that he even got that opportunity to start with.
Yeah, he's sitting on a 12 ERA right now. And obviously, as a reliever, that can fluctuate. But Will Smith's not going to be dictating the final games for this Royals team. It's going to be James MacArthur, and he's a very good starter. And I was, you know, when we were talking about the preview for this Royals team, I mentioned Brady Singer's going to have to step up if they want to have a good season. Here he is. He's had several good starts going so far, right? And it's a long season, but start off with a 1.54 ERA, even if those results may be a little unobtainable to maintain because he's giving up some home runs, you know, that's fine. But, you know, they're getting the results for now. And this is a group that can certainly move forward. And if they stay healthy, we'll be able to, I think, you know, with the pedigree at the top of the lineup, the top of the rotation, they're going to maintain this. And I'm buying that this is a playoff team going forward because they'll be able to make some trades at the deadline and improve this roster.
Yeah. And expand on your point on Brady Singer too. I think that some of those home runs are inflated. He's got a 58% ground ball rate right now.
Yeah.
So
he's a bowling ball guy.
Yeah, he's really that's something that I don't think he was that good at that last year. Like he's really kind of improved that back to, you know, like last year he was at 49%, which is still good, but like he's at 58% right now. He's really looked good so far.
Right. So let's go from one Central to the other. We'll go to the NL Central leading Milwaukee Brewers. They are 14-6 with a +35 run differential, and this was a team that I think I picked to finish last. Like we were not high on this team, this Brewers team this year, right? This is a team that lost their manager. They lost their two top starting pitchers, and we collectively chose them to finish fourth, fifth, and fifth, respectively. You picked the Brewers to finish fourth. They are currently first with a 14-6 record. Do you buy that the Brewers have overcome our criticisms and are racing to stay at the top of this NL Central division?
I think I'm going to sell the Brewers. I think that I've been, you know, and I guess to my expectation, they're probably closer just because I didn't think that just because they lost Corbin Burns and Woodruff that they were going to all of a sudden be terrible. Like their offense had a bunch of guys that really underperformed last year, and they did add to their offense. They added young guys. They added Jackson Churio, who's been pretty good. Not a great at the plate, but he's been really good defensively, and he's run the bases really well. He's been, you know, close to average at the plate.
I would, for what it's worth, I would contest that a 91 WRC plus by a 20-year-old at the major league level is extremely good.
Oh, I agree 100%. I'm just saying, like, if you're just
four homers,
forgetting the situation of him being such a young yeah. kid and stuff, like, just in general, like, is he a good player this year type thing? 91 yeah. WRC plus, I mean, it should be the expectation for him being such a young guy and such a highly touted prospect that we shouldn't be expecting him to have a 150 WRC plus, but. You know, being close to league average, not getting overwhelmed at the plate, has been, you know, pretty solid
yep.
for him.
Exactly.
And then, you know, they added other guys like, you know, Reese Hoskins, been good in their clubhouse, I think, at the very least. You know, Bryce Terang's had a horrid start. He's always had the plate discipline, but, you know, he's hitting for a little bit more power this year. I don't know how sustainable that is. And that's the reason I sell, is just because I believe in Willy Adames' bounce back. I believe in William Contreras, but Christian Yelich has another back injury. He was on fire to start the season, so I don't know how that's gonna. I don't know how that's gonna work out the rest of the year. Bryce Terang, I just don't believe that. I believe he might be closer to a league average hitter than he was last year when he was terrible at the plate. But I don't believe in him as a 144 WRC plus. Blake Perkins, I don't think is a 170 WRC plus guy. You know, and I just don't know where the offense is going to come from long term this year. And then you look at their pitching, and I'm kind of in the same boat where it's like, I mean, I think Freddy Peralta is amazing. I really like him. But other than him, it just seems like guys that are really overperforming their peripherals in a lot of places. You know, you look at, like, you know, Colin Ray's got his expected ERA based on StatCast is a 6.18. He's got a 2.08 ERA in four starts. And this is Colin Ray. It's not like this is, like, you know, Jacob deGrom or somebody who you just – who cares about the expected ERA. The expected ERA is kind of what you would expect from Colin Ray. Like, yeah. You know, well, I don't think Jacob Junis is going to put up a 2.25 ERA over the course of the season. And he's also hurt now. So they have a lot of pitching injuries too. DL Hall's been terrible. Like –
Oh, this DL Hall thing is worrying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it's time, bullpen. It's time. He's a reliever. He's been a reliever. You know, the Orioles thought he was a reliever. I know that they want to start him, and I don't blame them for wanting to start him, because just to try it out, you can always. It's a lot easier to send a guy to the bullpen midseason than to send a guy into the rotation midseason. So, but it's time to put him in the bullpen. He just can't throw enough strikes at the big league level in the rotation. But I don't fully believe in this team. I think the division that they're in is – I don't think the division has an elite team, but I think they're too deep for them to just waltz right over everybody, you know. And I think they'll stabilize, and this team will end up being – yeah, I think they'll end up around 500, maybe a tiny bit under, but – you know, that's kind of what I think they'll hit about the expectation I had before the season. So I kind of sell the start.
I would be remiss if I didn't sell the Brewers start, right? But I think for maybe some reasons that I wasn't expecting, like, I'm selling it because Christian Yelich is hurt. I'm selling it because, you know, a lot of the offense is predicated on the success of guys who are not going to maintain that success. And not to mention, right, Willy Adames is a free agent after this season. Yeah. I have a serious doubt that the small market franchise is going to let that pass by, with the Dodgers desperately needing a shortstop without trading Willy Adames Dodgers. Even if they try to just maintain that Bryce Terang just takes over at shortstop, the slot in Joey Ortiz at second, like, it very well could work out for them. Yeah. But, you know, I have a very strong doubt that they'll be able to keep this clubhouse together over the course of the season so far.
Yeah, I think that if they're in contention, like legit contention, like they're over 500 at the deadline, I don't think they'll sell Willy Adames. I know that the Brewers are small market. I don't think that they're gonna just sell, because I mean they did make some win this year moves in the offseason. I know they sold Corbin Burns, but they got big league pieces back for him, and Joey Ortiz and DL Hall, guys who are in the big leagues. And, you know, they also, remember, they signed Reese Hoskins, and I mean, they've made some pieces. I just, you know, I think they probably just qualifying off for Adama's and, you know,
right.
And I just don't see them selling if they're in position.
It depends on how desperate the Dodgers get, right? If there's an offer they can't refuse, then I have a feeling they'll be listening, right? And if that's the case, I think the attitude internally will not necessarily be for improving this team. And you look at the rest of this division, right? The Reds are getting a pretty strong start from some of the guys they need to succeed. The Cubs have had a disastrous feeling start, and they're 13-9, right? This division is not going to go away. The Pirates have yet to call up Paul Skeens. So there's a lot of improvement internally in the NL Central behind the Brewers, and the Brewers only have the one game lead, right? They haven't been able to capitalize on this big start. And to me, that screams that, you know, as they get closer to the Dodgers pumping up the offer for Willy Adames, they might start thinking about it, especially if they start losing some games. So I'm selling the Brewers' start. I think it's a good start. I think Bryce Terang is an impressive start, but overall, they're not going to be able to rely on just Freddy Peralta in that starting rotation, and they're going to have trouble once the Colin Ray comes back to earth. And he's a Cubs legend. I love Colin Ray, but it's going to be tough. So let's skip over to the last or to the teams that have disappointed so far this season, and we'll start with the big surprise disappointment team so far, and that is the Houston Astros, who are 7-16 with a -28 run differential. Matt, what is going on in Houston? This is a crazy start.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit of a combination of everything, but to be totally honest, I think the Astros might just be cooked. I really do. I mean, I think that their owner has decided that he wasn't happy with winning. He was happy with butting in and making his own decisions for the team. And he wanted more. He wanted to be more controlling. So he fired James Click, and he, you know, brought in somebody who he could control. And he's been making a lot of the decisions, and the decisions he made have been bad. He kept Martin Maldonado for inexplicable reasons and kept throwing him in there. He signed Jose Abreu to a 3-year contract when nobody else was offering him a 3-year contract, and he's cooked. He's the worst. He's the worst player in baseball right now. He went out and spent $100 million on a free agent closer when he had a bullpen that appeared to be very strong already. And he, they lack rotation depth, because of the injuries that they knew about most of these injuries coming into the season too. I get Framber got hurt early in the season. You can't predict that. Verlander missed the first couple weeks, but you knew Luis Garcia was out. You knew that Urquidy was supposed to be out to start the year. And you're relying on JP France, Hunter Brown, and I mean they'd be worse if they weren't for Ronel Blanco being the best pitcher in baseball for the first month, and I don't think that that's going to continue. So. And then their lineup, I mean, Altuve's been hitting, but Bregman struggled. And the bottom of their lineup has always been, there's been a lot of holes in that. I mean, look at, they got Jake Myers in there. They got, I don't know how much I believe in Chaz McCormick and what he did last year. He was good last year, but there were a lot of red flags in his profile that make you think he's more of a – I don't think he's as bad as he's been so far this year, but I think he's more of a league average hitter than what he was last year. And, they've got
– I mean – they just. Chaz McCormick does have a 102 WRC plus, 352 on base. Okay. He's okay.
He must have had a good week then, because back when they played early in the week, he had like a 70 WRC plus. So he must have had a good weekend. But either way, I mean, they've got Jose Abreu / John Singleton playing first base.
Yeah, it's not good.
They have to, and their bullpen's really struggled. So. Compared to what we expected. I mean, this team is – I'm not going to say the Astros are absolutely not going to come back and win a bunch of games, because, I mean, this team has the track record that you give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt. But to start off, 7-16 is a hole to start the season. Like that
yeah.
I know everyone says April doesn't matter. Well, you can lose the division in April by having just a terrible month. I mean, they played – if they play 10 games over 500 the rest of the season, then they are like 82-80. Like, yeah, that's the type of start that they've had. So, you know, they're in a huge hole. They've got to win. They're going to have to win on like a 100-win pace probably to win this division, because the Rangers, as we've talked about before the season, they need to stay afloat for the first half before they get their pitching back.
And Scherzer's coming back earlier than expected.
And Scherzer's coming back, and DeGrom will come back later this year, and Molly will come back later this year. And, like, their pitching's going to get healthy at some point. So, you know, and you look at the Mariners as a team that, you know, they're going to at least be around a 500 team this year. So, they've really underperformed on offense, too, to start. And the one thing I will say in the Astros' favor is they have played a very difficult schedule so far. They've already played the Braves. They played the Yankees. Have they played the Yankees twice?
Yeah, they played all their games against the Yankees.
Yeah, so they played the Yankees twice.
And they got the Cubs this week. It doesn't get any easier.
Well, it's easier than the Braves and the Yankees, but
true. But another over 500 team after a bunch more. Yep. So
yeah, I mean, they're gonna get a lot of their tough games out of the way. Now, if you look at their strength of schedule remaining, it's actually like one of the lowest in baseball, because they've played so many tough teams already. So you know, it's one of those things. But I'm at the point to where, and I picked the Mariners to win this division to start the year, and I'm at the point where I'm feeling confident that it's not going to be the Astros. I think they could maybe sneak into the wild card still, but I feel pretty confident that it'll be the Rangers or the Mariners.
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm selling this Astros start. Yeah. I think this Astros team is going to figure it out. I think the biggest misstep was not trading Presley, right? I think disrupting the hierarchy in the bullpen and expecting it to just stitch together, where Hader now signs on and feels like he's just taking a job from a guy who's older than him, right? A World Series champ, mind you, with, you know, and Presley feels like he's not able to, you know, be the closer anymore, and he's definitely pitching with some resentment. Like, the way they've destroyed the hierarchy of that bullpen, plus the injuries in the starting rotation, has led to this start. The offense has been obscenely good, I would say, based on looking at these statistics. Jose Altuve's got a 196 WRC plus. He's currently in the MVP race rather easily. Kyle Tucker's doing Kyle Tucker things. He's got a 161 WRC plus. Nobody's talking about him. Jeremy Pena is doing kind of a Jeremy Pena type start, where he isn't walking, but he's hitting the ball really hard, and that's resulting in a lot of hits. That may fall off pretty quickly here, but typical. Yordan Alvarez is Yordan. He's got 5 homers already. He's got a 152 WRC plus. As long as Yordan stays healthy, he's going to be one of the best hitters in baseball. And Yainer Diaz is one of the best hitting catchers in baseball. He's got a 124 WRC plus. So, you know, that's 5 hitters over 120 WRC plus, if you were counting. And they've got 3 more hitters over 100 and 1 at 99 WRC plus in their lineup so far. And I did not mention Alex Bregman, who's off to a cold start in a contract year, mind you, which means I think Alex Bregman will heat up here at some point. The overall point is that this offense can definitely carry this team. Right. Currently, the bullpen is giving it up. I think the Astros need to cut bait on Ryan Presley as soon as possible. Right. Get him out of there, and probably cut bait on Jose Abreu, too. Right. He's hurting the team. He's got a -1.1 war. He's got a -32 WRC plus. The Jose Abreu and Ryan Presley being kicked out of the closer's role is really hampering this team. They're going to iron that out. I would trade Presley for a first baseman prospect, somebody who's blocked at the major league level. I would, you know, probably just cut Abreu, eat the cash, and move on, right? And if you can get to that point, this Astros team becomes that 100-win team that can get back into this division race. And they've got an easy schedule, like you said. I think they can definitely play at 100-win-plus pace the rest of the way based on, you know, the way that schedule sets up. So, you know, clear problems, but I feel like this Astros team definitely is looking up at the rest of the season and can get back to the good spot. So let's look at the other team that only has 7 wins for this buy or sell situation, and that's the Minnesota Twins. 7-13, -25 run differential. I mean, we talked about a little bit with the Guardians and the Royals earlier. Twins, I think everyone in the pod picked the Twins.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and to win this division, and they've started off so poorly. Do you buy or sell this slow start from the Twins?
I think I buy it. And the reason I buy it is because I just don't think that I don't think they're going to hit, like, at all. I really don't. I mean, you know, you've already got a lot of – you've already got the injuries again. You know, Carlos Correa, Royce Lewis, both injured. You know, that's been there. That's been a problem for them. And then you've got – you just – they just don't have – I mean, their bats are just not very good. Like,
yeah.
You look down the list and it's like you're relying on, you know, Carlos Santana's had a bad start. He had a little bit of a resurgence last year where you thought maybe he could be like a above league average hitter this year or something, but he hasn't been. Max Kepler's had a terrible start. He's only played 5 games. I guess he's hurt. Christian Vasquez has been bad. You know, you look at like Manuel Margot, who they traded for, has been really bad. I believe, you know, you look at Byron Buxton has been really bad at the plate. And, you know, this team has way too much swing and miss. Their strikeout rate's over 26% as a team, which is crazy. And they don't combine that by walking a ton either. They're a roughly league average walk rate as a team at 8.6%. So that's a problem. And you look at their rotation and you know, you still got Joe Ryan, who's a good pitcher. You still got Pablo Lopez, who's a good pitcher at the top of your rotation. You know, Bailey Ober's performed okay. At least his peripherals have been okay. I think he'll end up being fine. You know, you're missing some pitchers too. You know, you're missing your closer and Yoan Duran, so that hurts. But I mean, it's just this team's going to have to figure out a way to score runs, and I just don't see anybody in their lineup who's going to do it. And in a way that's similar to the Astros, I think on a rate basis, the rest of the season, the Twins are probably going to have the best record in this division going forward. But they've dug themselves such a big hole that I just don't know that they can come back from. I mean, they're 8 games behind right now.
Yeah,
already. Like, I think they can, but I just don't know that it's likely that they're going to come back from that. So we'll see. But I'm gonna buy that this start is kind of legit in that they're probably below what we expected them to be this year.
Yeah, I kind of agree, right? I'll say I buy that this Twins team is no longer the favorite in the AL Central, but I'm gonna sell that this team is now a bad team, if that makes sense. Like, I think this is an injury-related issue. Correa, hurt. Royce Lewis, hurt in game one after he homered in his first at-bat, right? Max Kepler's been hurt. Joan Duran, hurt. Like, the most important players on this team have been hurt, which leaves the weight of carrying the team onto Edouard Julian, Byron Buxton, and the two starting pitchers, Pablo Lopez and Joe Ryan. Like, I fully understand this. Just this Twins team was flawed, and we mentioned that in our preview shows. They needed those guys, like the guys that are hurt right now, they needed them to be very good players, right? They needed them to carry this team. And if you're replacing those players with the backup pieces, the team doesn't have as much bite, and it becomes a lot easier to navigate the good hitters in this lineup. So Byron Buxton's not getting anything, and he's pressing at the plate, right? He's walking 1.4% of the time. Like that's a guy who is up there hacking away because he's trying to do it all because he knows his teammates can't get it done.
Yeah, well, 1.4% is not a Buxton line, but his plate discipline's always been an issue. But anyways, when you have I think the last thing I'll mention on the Twins, and we'll move on because we gotta get moving here. But the last thing I'll mention is that their injuries are honestly becoming, to me, are becoming like, this is who the Twins are. They're always going to be injured. They have injury-prone players like Correa, who's failed 2 physicals before he went there, and he's had issues for a long time with injuries. Like, who knows when Buxton's healthy right now, which is crazy, and fingers crossed he stays healthy all year because we haven't seen that before. But chances are Buxton's going to miss games at some point. You know, Royce Lewis, I think it's been a lot of freak injuries with him, but you know, he's been injured a lot in his young career. You know, I hate saying that, but this team just seems to be a team that has a bunch of players who are just kind of injury injury risks, and this is the kind of thing you risk you run when you have that, is that, you know, they could all get hurt at the same time and you go on a stretch where you're 7-13 to start the season. Like, but we'll see. I think, you know, it's almost, it's one of those things where you almost think, you know, when a team start, if a team starts injured, they're probably not going to get less injured as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You, that's the you thing tend that to worries agree with me. That.
Well, you know, the guys get healthy. I understand that aspect of it, but you know, it's one of those where I sell the that they're bad, but if they don't get healthy, it is going to look like this the rest of the way, and that will not be a good thing. Let's move to some specific performances, right? The Boston Red Sox are 13-10, rather, and they are not in the basement in the AL East. We were all projecting them to be the basement in the AL East. It's been off the strength of two of their strongest starting pitchers and two of the best starting pitching performances to this point in baseball. So, Matt, do you buy Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck starting off the season with a 0.66 and a 1.35 ERA, respectively, as being able to maintain, you know, Cy Young-type performance through the course of this season?
Well, Cy Young type performance for, especially for Cutter Crawford, I'd say no. You know, the one thing with Cutter Crawford is, you know, he hasn't given up a home run yet this season. And, you know, with his profile of being not a super hard thrower who gives up, who doesn't get the ball on the ground a ton, he's going to give up some home runs. He's got a 38% ground ball rate. You know, that number's going to come up, but I think he's a good pitcher. Like, if you came into the season thinking, oh God, Cutter Crawford's in their rotation, it's trash, I think that you're probably mistaken on that. So I do believe in him being a little bit improved, better than he was last year, which was still pretty good last year. They had a 4.04 ERA on the season in 129 mm-hmm. innings. I could see him doing something maybe even a little bit better than that this year. But I don't totally believe in his changes. The one guy I do believe in, Tanner Houck. I really like what I've seen from him so far. The one concern I do have about Tanner Houck is that, you know, he hasn't pitched a ton of innings. He's been in the bullpen a lot in his career. Last year he was a starter, but he only pitched 106 innings. But the thing that Tanner Houck's done, and we've seen this in a few different places this year, is he's thrown a lot more splitters this year than he had been. And we've seen that with Zach Wheeler, who's off to an incredible start. We've seen that with Bryce Miller from the Mariners, who's been off to a great start. So if you look at if you look at StatCast, I believe Tanner Houck is throwing I was trying to find his pitch percentages here. His splitter, he's throwing 7% more splitters than he did last year. And he's also throwing a lot more sliders he's kind of ditched his four-seam fastball, too. He's throwing a lot of sinkers and cutters. So he's changed his fastball shape, and he's throwing a lot more splitters. And I think there's some real reason to be optimistic about him. His ground ball rate's good. He's not walking anybody. His command's been awesome. And he's striking guys out. So his peripherals line up. I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young. You know, like I say, it's Tanner Houck. His track record's not there to think he'll really keep this up. But I think he's a good pitcher. Remember 2021 when the Red Sox had their gigantic year that kind of came out of the blue? Tanner Houck was really good that year too. He only pitched 69 innings, but he had 13 starts in that season. He had spent time in the minor leagues during that season, and he had a 2.58 FIP, a 3.52 ERA, and 2.3 wins above replacement that season. So this is a guy who has had success in the past, and I really do believe that he's legit.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to put credit where credit's due, right? Craig Breslow came over as the GM of the Red Sox, and he's implemented a strategy that has certainly paid off in terms of the Red Sox starting rotation. It's been much, much better to start the year than I think anybody expected. You know, you mentioned how we shouldn't have said the Red Sox rotation was bad, but I think we kind of did, right? Like, I'm pretty sure we were not convinced by it. And Cutter Crawford's proved us wrong, right? Tanner Houck's proved us wrong. I'm perfectly okay to admit that. I think I'm selling both in terms of Cy Young potential, right? But I am buying these changes from both guys, I think. I think at the very least, you've got two very effective starters, and I'm buying the changes that Craig Breslow has made there, and it puts Boston in a better spot. If they can just be a little better than we thought they were going to be, maybe they don't finish last in the AL East this year. That's a big step in the right direction for Boston, and having these two guys there to lead the way in terms of pitching adjustments is a big benefit. The other pitcher in the positive direction that I want to look at is Reed Detmers of the Angels. Through four starts, he's got a 1.19 ERA. This is a guy who's thrown a no-hitter before. Do we buy that maybe he's turned a corner and he's finally finding the success that he was kind of promised as a prospect?
I'm buying him to a certain level. He's always gotten a lot of swing and miss, and his issues have really been just command and then getting, you know, keeping – and then the home runs. I mean, he last year 3.6 walks per nine, and then he gave up a lot of home runs, didn't get the ball on the ground very often. He still had a pretty good year last year. I mean, this is a guy, you know, his track record's not terrible. He's a career 4.15 ERA, and he was a former top prospect who is now in year four in the big leagues, and one of those years was five starts. So, you know, he's only 24. He hasn't been around a super long time. So this is part of the typical development curve for a pitcher, and you know he's changed his pick smidge a little bit too. He's a guy that throwing fewer off speed pitches. He's throwing his fastball a little bit more, and you know he's thrown a lot more changeup so far this year. And I think that part of his thing is he's probably get better results with that. He's throwing a little bit fewer curveballs. And he's cut his slider percentage down by 12%. So, you know, throwing a lot more fastballs, a lot more changeups, probably good for him. So, you know, that's a good, you know, I think he's got a good profile. I like the fact that he's a former top prospect. The talent's always been there. He's throwing his fastball harder than he's ever thrown it. 94.5 is his career high right now so far. And I mean, I don't think he's going to put up a 1.19 ERA this year, but I think he's going to be pretty good. So I like Reed Detmers.
Yeah, I'll buy Reed Detmers a start for sure. I think in terms of being a top of the AL type starter, maybe a future ace for this LA Angels team. I think I'd buy the way this is going for him. And you know, based on the no-hitter a few years ago and then this start, I like what Reed Detmers is putting together. Let's do some hitters real quick in the good direction. How about Jordan Westberg, man? Baltimore's gotten a lot of big starts from guys, and we probably mentioned Jackson Holliday's struggles last week, but they're 14-7. They're currently leading the AL East, are the Baltimore Orioles, and Jordan Westberg is maybe the surprise star of the offense. A 333 average, a 392 on base, a 639 slugging, 5 homers, 18 RBIs, and a 200 WRC plus to this point. Do we buy that Jordan Westberg, who was a top 100 prospect in the shadow of guys like Gunnar Henderson, Kobe Mayo, Jackson Holliday, is he a breaking past those guys and looking like a superstar to sit alongside Gunnar and Adley?
I think I'm going to buy that he's good. I don't think he's going to put up a 200 WRC plus this year. I think
probably not that.
I think he's... He does the plate discipline stuff concerns me a little bit with him. The walk rate isn't very high. He's hitting the ball really hard, but he's kind of been this guy his entire time in the minor leagues too. And it's
I've got a solution for that though, Matt. I think the reason for that is Jordan Westberg is the guy that teams are choosing to pitch to. In lieu of pitching to Gunnar Henderson, in lieu of pitching to Adley Rutschman, in lieu of pitching to Anthony Santander, and they're getting punished for it.
But and he's got a 373 batting average on balls in play too. But he's hitting for power. He's hitting the ball really hard. He plays good defense in the middle infield. Like I like him. I think he's good.
Yep.
So I'm gonna buy that he's a legitimately like, you know, I don't think he's the best. I don't think he's one of the top two or three players on this team. But I think he's really good.
Yeah, I'm buying all my Jordan Westberg stock right now. Right, this is a guy who had power in the minors, right? He slugged over 500 in AAA over two consecutive seasons, got to 130 WRC plus there. I imagine he'll be a around 120 to 130 WRC plus guy in the future. And that's a darn good player given the context that he can play both second base, third base. He can probably moonlight at shortstop if you needed him to. Being able to play all over that infield as needed, depending on how you want to play Jackson Holliday or Gunnar Henderson, he becomes the perfect fit to go alongside two star shortstop type prospects in Holliday and Henderson. And as Jackson Holliday struggles, Jordan Westberg is 25 years old. He's been through AAA twice. He's had a stint at the majors already. This breakout feels very inevitable, and I'm believing that I think the Baltimore made the right call not trading him. He was in trade rumors all offseason, and they did a good job not trading him. Let's look at another former top prospect. This one, you know, of the top five variety, in Ellie De La Cruz, who has hit 306, 412, 639. Same slugging as Jordan Westberg, by the way. 6 home runs, 10 stolen bases for Ellie so far, and a 180 WRC plus. Is the Ellie De La Cruz breakout, superstar breakout here?
I really like what I've seen from him. I think that the thing about Ellie De La Cruz is that his floor is going to be incredibly high because he has those physical tools where he can be a really good defender at shortstop. He can be an elite base runner. And even if he's not, like, just absolutely tearing it up at the plate, he's still going to be a good player. I mean, last year he had an 84 WRC plus in 98 games. He still put up 2 wins above replacement. So he was still a solid player last year while not really, you know, while still figuring it out at the plate. And I do think there's some figuring it out left to do. He's hitting the ball really, really hard. He's got a 96th percentile barrel rate, which is awesome. His big thing is that his whiff rate is really bad and his strikeout rate is really bad. He is chasing less than he did last year, which is encouraging though. Last year he had a 24th percentile chase rate. This year his chase rate's gotten a lot better. He's at a 47th percentile. He's not swinging out inside the zone quite as much as he was last year. And if this guy ends up being a league average, plate discipline guy with his power and just overall profile, it could be a real breakout. Now, he's not putting up a 180 WRC plus, but I think that he's probably going to put up at least an above average season at the plate, which combined with his other skills is going to put him in that like borderline all-star caliber value. I'm going to buy that Ellie De La Cruz is having I think I'll call it a soft breakout. I don't think it's a full blown, like, oh my God, he's going to win MVP breakout, but I think it's going to be a soft breakout where he's like, people are going to look up at the end of the season and be like, Ellie De La Cruz put up 4 wins above replacement this year. He's really, really good, even though we weren't really thinking he was that good this year. Like, that's what the season's going to be for him.
I think of this breakout as, remember when Fernando Tatis first came up? He struck out like 35% of the time, but then hit 40 home runs. That's how I feel like this season's going to go for Ellie. He's going to have like a crazy slugging, but then this crazy strikeout percentage, and you're going to be like, I don't know if he can maintain this, but then we'll say that all season and we'll be at the All-Star break and he'll have 25 homers and we'll be like, I don't know if he can maintain this. And he's just going to kind of keep swinging for the fences with the big body, the big frame and everything. And it's just going to start working. And as he gets more comfortable with this, you know, with plate approach at the major league level, he's going to grow into, the better plate discipline numbers, the better contact numbers. He's going to figure it out. Right now, he's hacking away. He's got a good walk rate, but he's very much a 3 true outcomes type of hitter. But this is a guy who steals immediately, right, when he gets on base. So he almost needs to have a little more contact in that profile, and it's going to take him, I think, a couple of years to get all of that, you know, worked out and together. But I think we might have ourselves like he's going to have like a 40-40 type of season, just somehow with like a 40% strikeout rate too, like the old 340s or something like that is what he's going to go for here.
I do worry a little bit about him hitting 40 home runs. Like, I think he's going to be somewhere in the 20s because he's hitting the ball on the ground way too much.
He plays in Coors Light, all right?
That is true. Pop up
to right field, home run over there in Cincy, especially when it gets humid in the summer on the river.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Ball flies
out of that ballpark.
He's going to have to adjust a little bit still and hit the ball in the air more, because right now it's a 60% ground ball rate, and you know, and like you mentioned, if you're playing in that ballpark, you're going to want to hit the ball in the air every single time. So that's an adjustment that, but that's also an adjustment that he might figure something out, take that in the middle of the season, and he's hitting the ball so hard, and his plate discipline numbers have improved enough to where, like, if he makes that adjustment midseason, he could just go on an absolute rampage at some point too. So
right, yeah.
You know, I like what I've seen from him so far for sure.
He's carrying Cincy a little bit also, which is the other thing. Him and Spencer Steer are kind of hauling Cincy to the 12-10 record right now.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, I gotta adjust this because we're coming up on an hour. Give me one player that has had a bad start this season. I'll let it open to you. It can be on our list. It can be anybody in the league. Somebody who's had a bad start this season that you are not worried about in the slightest, that you are saying they're going to get right at some point. One player. Who's it going to be? I put you on the spot, too. You know, maybe should have alerted you to that or something, but you still there? Uh-oh. Well, it still shows live. I'll talk. Oh, there we go. You are back.
I was literally just saying that I didn't have the list because my Google Chrome had frozen, and it had been like that for like 15 minutes, and I thought it was going to make it, but it crashed. I clicked on Baseball Savant, and then I guess for whatever reason, Baseball Savant decided to kill my Google Chrome. But I think that you were mentioning a guy that I'm not worried about that's been really bad so far.
Yep.
And
any of them.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what bad is.
Below league average, like, below 100 WRC plus.
Man, oh man. Probably, I mean, maybe Randy. I don't think Randy's going to be this bad. I think O'Neill Cruz will figure it out to a certain level. I don't know. I mean, Yandy Diaz isn't going to be this bad. I'm sure he'll be fine. He's got a really low BABIP. You know, he always goes through some stretches where he hits the ball on the ground too much. I am somewhat legitimately worried about Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
You know, he's 37. He's 37 now. Yeah. I'm worried about him. I'd say on our list, we had Lizardo. I'm not super worried about Lizardo.
No.
His stuff looks fine. I think it's just a bad start. I would say I'm worried about Nick Castellanos, but I don't think he's been good for 3 years now. I know that he had a somewhat decent year last year, but he really outperformed his expected numbers last year for most of the season. And, you know, this is kind of the guy he's been since he's been with Philly. He chases way, way, way too much. And, you know, like, he was a negative 0.4 WAR player in 2022. I don't think he's as bad as he's been so far this year, but I think he's a below average hitter who plays atrocious defense. So,
now that's the thing about Nick Castellanos, right? Is he'll have a month where you're like, why would anyone pay this guy anything to play baseball? And then he'll have a month where he's the best player on the planet, and you go, oh, I forgot about that bad month. And that's Nick Castellanos.
Yeah. The thing that I'll push back on that a little bit with is that I think that his highs of he's actually pretty good are now like, oh, he's okay. He's like a little bit above average. But his lows are like strikes out 30 times in 30 games and doesn't get a hit. He goes for like an 0-for-30 stretch with 28 strikeouts or something crazy. Like he's just not. I mean, I just don't think he's. I would say he's cooked, but this is 3 years in a row now. And you know, like I mentioned too, I don't think that Jose Abreu is going to figure it out either. I mean, he was like this last year. So, and one more that I know David's going to probably agree with, but hey, it's Kyle Hendricks, man. He doesn't need to be pitching in the big leagues in 2024. Like, he had a soft resurgence last year, but he really wasn't that good last year. He was just kind of like,
He was good last year.
He was okay.
He did Kyle Hendricks things, but the command's been off. And when Kyle Hendricks has no command, He gets lit up, and it is not good, and it is horribly sad to see. Brutal. It's funny because I was going to go ahead and go Nick Castellanos is the guy I'm not worried about. I think he'll be fine, but he'll be fine to Nick Castellanos standards, which are lower now than they have been a few years ago. But he'll heat up. He'll have a hot month here at some point. So not worried about him. I am worried about Kyle Hendricks for sure. I think I have to sell Kyle Hendricks the rest of the way. Who is your player of the week here, Matt? And then we'll sign off.
Yeah, my player of the week is going to be a guy that I'm biased because he pitched at Auburn.
Of course.
Casey Mize. And I think that it's just a good story. You know, he was the former number one overall pick and was a top prospect. So, you know, he had all these expectations coming up, and he wasn't great when he first came up, and then he got injured. He had Tommy John surgery, and then he had another surgery on, I think it was like a lumbar thing, like a back type thing. I don't remember what his second one was specifically, but he's had multiple injuries, and he's come back this year and he's looked pretty good. He's throwing hard, a lot harder than he has in the past. You know, and this week he pitched two games. He pitched 12 innings in the two starts, and he put up a 1.5 ERA in the two games. You know, the strikeouts and walks weren't elite. They were, you know, 7.5 strikeouts per nine, a little bit under the average. He did have pretty good control, 2.2 walks per nine. You know, but you know, limiting the hard contact, and you know, he's at least looked like a big leaguer that you can, if he can stay healthy this year, you can kind of grow him his start. So we'll see if he's able to keep growing at the big league level. But you know, in four starts, he's got a 2.95 ERA. So I thought it was worth mentioning. He was not the best pitcher in baseball this week. You know, that would probably be Zach Eflin, but I thought that it would be good to give a shout out to Casey Mize.
It's a good one. I am going to throw to Damian's player of the week. I have to look this guy up. I've never heard of this guy until Damian brought him up. So Damian and I both picked rookies. Mitchell Parker of the Washington Nationals this week was pretty electric. He made two starts, his first two major league starts, mind you, and those were a 1.5 ERA, six innings pitched in each start, and six strikeouts in each inning there. So 12 strikeouts for Mitchell Parker, no walks also. That's the big one, I think. And for a rookie to come out of the major leagues, not walk anybody, that's very impressive. My guy was going to be Blaze Alexander, another rookie, this time for the Diamondbacks. And he led the league this week in RBI, did Blaze Alexander with 9. I you know, RBI is a very much a happenstance stat, but for a guy to come in and lead the league in those RBI categories over that last 7 days, he's been pretty good. You know, I'm a fan of a guy that comes in and hits the ball well like that. And, you know, he's a Diamondbacks player. He's been playing on the infield a little bit, kind of bouncing back and forth. I think he took over at shortstop when Perdomo went down. So, you know, good for Blaze Alexander, a guy who definitely deserves it this week. And, you know, we'll see if he can keep it going. He's a guy that's got like a 400 on batting average on balls in play, though, so I highly doubt that he's going to be able to keep that up for the rest of the season. So before we go to your moment of the week, I'll go to Damian's moment of the week, and we might slide over an hour here because I have to mention this. So Aaron Boone for the Yankees today, they're playing the A's. It's a very menial game. And Boone doesn't like something in the first batter of the game and says something to the ump. I think it's Hunter Wendelstedt, says, you know, don't say anything else. And so Boone raises his hand, says, all right, and he shuts up. And the camera stays on Boone. And somebody behind Boone says something, and the ump turns and throws Boone out of the game. And I just, you know, it's crazy, right? The video goes around. John Boy retweeted it. The amount of people that I had on my feed saying, I haven't even watched baseball this season, but the only thing I've seen is how shit the umpires are. And I've never related to anything more. It is so infuriating that we have got umpires on such a power trip that on the day game at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're sitting here like piss moaning that a manager didn't like something, even though it wasn't even the manager who said anything. It is infuriating, and I really do think the umpires need a check of some kind, because this is getting out of hand. This season has been the worst umpired season I can remember. And I mean, this, as for a moment, this was just crazy. And the A's beat the Yankees today. Like, this mattered, because Aaron Boone wasn't there to lead this team.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. People have been calling, Hunter Wendelstedt a Nepo ump, because his dad was an ump for like 30 years. So I thought that was kind of funny, but yeah, I mean,
it's been bad.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the classic ump problem, with just, you know, umpire gets upset about something that gets said to him and freaks out. Like, I think that's a classic ump problem.
Yeah.
You know, some of the bad calls we've seen, I think, are probably magnified a little bit by the current day and age. And I mean, like Angel Hernandez wasn't, that's just Angel Hernandez. But,
right.
You know, when it comes to actually officiating what's happening, I don't know that Hunter Wendelstedt's done that poorly. I mean, he's probably been fine, but this is the type of thing that, you know, we had that thing with, you know, I think it was Rob Drake a few years ago that was like basically charging the mound, and there's been issues. So, but we'll see. I'm, you know, hopefully it turns around a little bit. But my moment of the week, and I have, it's kind of cheating because I kind of have two, but it's the Rockies. The Rockies are currently under federal investigation because on their flight that they chartered with United across the country this week, for some reason, and of course it's probably more on the airline for allowing this to happen, the coaches for the team were taking social media. I think it was on Instagram. They were posting videos from the cockpit while the plane was in the air, talking about how they were going to land the plane. And the FAA and the feds are going after investigating them. And I thought that was like the craziest thing I've ever heard. Like, what in the world's going on? And then in one of their games this weekend, they hit what they thought was a walk-off home run from Jacob Stallings, of all people, who then got called back for fan interference. So they did end up winning the game anyways. But it's been kind of a wild week for the Rockies, and really those two things are the most Rockies things to ever happen, except for the fact that the Rockies ended up winning the game with the fan interference. That's not very Rockies that they won, but all this other stuff is the most Rockies thing ever. It's like, it's just like what is going on here? So I thought that was a kind of a funny story I saw this week, and I had to put it in here.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockies are an adventure. It's remarkable that they aren't being investigated for, you know, not getting their baseball team better. And so for some of these contracts and trades, they should have been investigated for that Arenado trade. That one will always piss me off.
With Chris Bryant signing.
That's fine. Chris deserved that money. It's just, you know, he deserved it before, and now he's getting paid it, and he's not doing what he did before.
He didn't deserve it from the Rockies. Need to be the one paying it, though, because they weren't going to win. Even if he was 2016 Chris Bryant, they weren't going to win with him.
That is true. But you could still hand out contracts. It's just why. But anyway, my moment of the week is another guy who I ask why. Travis d'Arnaud could have been a starting catcher on 15 Major League Baseball teams, if not more. And he's decided to stay with the Braves over the course of several seasons, including a season where they acquired a better catcher than him. And said better catcher has pulled a hamstring or something, and he's out. Travis d'Arnaud hit three home runs in a game this week, propelling the Braves to a win. One of those was a go-ahead grand slam. He's since homered again. He's not so much a player of the week here because all his damage was done in like one game, but remarkable week for Travis d'Arnaud, who definitely I want to mention here as we get ready to sign off, that that's a guy who has prioritized winning and culture over a paycheck. And, you know, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't know. Probably a bad thing, because he probably could have been paid like a starting catcher and he's getting paid like a backup. But, you know, he's winning, he's happy. I think you just tip your cap and you move on. The Braves are a juggernaut, and it's going to be really annoying to see them beat somebody in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, that game was crazy. And unfortunately, not enough people got to watch it because it was an Apple TV exclusive. But it was fun. And then of course the following day, hitting a home run in the next game was crazy too. It's just like, this guy didn't just have one good game; he's just on fire. And then he hit another one tonight, so now he's got 5 in 3 games or something. 5 and 4. Well, he didn't play last night, so they played Trump. So he's got 5 home runs in 3 games. So he's just on a tear. And it's shocking because he looked totally lost at the plate for the first 2 weeks too, and then it's just all of a sudden he's the best player on the planet for 3 games. So I thought it's been fun to watch.
It has. So that finishes up our recap of this week. We'll be back next Monday, as always. So be sure to mark your calendars and tune in for Damian, Matt, and David. We will catch you guys next time.